Well, I wonder who is the gold medalist of our church? If they were handing out medals for our church and there was an award ceremony, who would get the gold medal? Who would have to put up with silver and have to apologize to everyone? I'm so sorry, I've let you down. I've only got a silver medal. I'm only the second best in the whole world. Cry, cry. Who would get the gold medal? Would it be the one who's the most fun to be with? Would it be the one who's got the greatest talent? Would it be the one with the strongest character? Would it be the one with the best looks? Who would get the gold medal? Or would a gold medal even be appropriate or a suitable thing? We were on quite a long walk in Cornwall with the group that we took. And we went from Tintagel, if you know it, to, well, not quite Tintagel, but almost Tintagel, to Boscastle, which is not very far, but it's quite a lot of up and down. And it was the Wednesday before last, so a very hot day. And I was near the back with Sam, and Sam quoted to me that the last shall be first. And that was very good and very spiritual, but when it comes to long walks, the last are normally not first. The last normally stay last. They're always last. They catch up with the people who are first. And then just as they arrive there, the people who are first, you know what they do? They walk on. They say, oh, good, you've caught up with us. Let's go on now. So in life, often, the last stay the last. But we know that's not true spiritually. And Sam was right in quoting that proverb, that Bible idea, that the last shall be first. And when it comes to the Christian life, and when it comes to serving Christ, those who are best, although not to be awarded gold medals, but those who are best are those who serve best, those who think about service as one of their primary characteristics, those who think about service as the thing they want to work on, those who think about service as the thing that they train for, those who think about service as their goal, as their dream, like all those Olympic guys saying, I've been looking forward to this for 4 years or 10 years or however long, ever since I was born. How about this for a Christian goal? Ever since I became a Christian, I was born again, I've been working towards being a better servant. That's what God calls us to be. Better, improving, breaking world records, servants of Him. And that's what we're going to think about for a few moments today in our series, looking at characteristics that are really important, that are vital for an alive, Christ-centered church. And we thought about all kinds of things, and this morning we're thinking about serving Christ and one another. And the first thing to see is that every Christian is to be a servant with Christ, our ultimate ruler, and Christ as our example. If you look there in Mark chapter 10, you don't have to turn it up, but there's that incident there where James and John, they come to Jesus, or the mother comes to Jesus in a different text, and basically there's a question about having a position of prominence. Can we have a position of prominence in the future, in glory, on your right hand, on your left hand? Jesus answers them with a few points about the future, but then he calls them together in verse 42 and says, you know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. And it seems that later they're still arguing. So in Luke's Gospel, chapter 22, very close to the death of Jesus, they're still arguing about who's the greatest. It says there a dispute arose among them as to which of them was considered to be the greatest. And Jesus said to them, the kings of the Gentiles lord it over them. A similar phrase to back in Mark's Gospel. And those who exercise authority over them call them benefactors. But you are not to be like that. Instead, repeating that lesson, the greatest among you should be like the youngest, and the one who rules like the one who serves. People, and perhaps especially men, are always disputing about who or what is the greatest. Who's the greatest team? Who's the greatest runner? Who's the greatest film director? What's the greatest film? And maybe sometimes, who's the greatest Christian? That's our default, to see things in the world's perspective, which is about who is the greatest, the most prominent, the most skillful. Jesus says, look, that's what the Gentiles do. He has to keep reminding them, look, that's the world's values, to think who will be the greatest, who will exercise the most authority, who will be the big cheese. That's how the world thinks. Jesus says, if you want to be great in my kingdom, then you need to be servant or slave of all. You need to be different. And then Jesus says, look at me, I'm the master. I'm the one who sits at the table and should be served. But I've come among you as one who serves. I've come to show you service. I'm going to think about that in just a few moments. But he says to them, you need to excel. You need to be great by being a servant, by being humble. There's two main words for service in the New Testament. There's the word that's really the word for slave. It's not always consistently translated. So sometimes when you see the word servant in English, it is the word slave in the original language. So there's the word for slave, the idea of someone who's bonded, who's committed into service. And then there's the word that's translated servant, but is more like the word that we have for servant. The words overlap, but the word for servant is a softer word. And if you look through all the different references to the use of those two words, generally speaking, it works like this. We're slaves of Christ to be servants of all, and particularly servants of his church and servants of the gospel. So we come into bonded service to Christ. We commit ourselves completely to Christ, and in response to that, we serve others. So Paul often refers to himself as a slave. We see the word servant in English, but he uses the word slave. I'm a slave of Christ. And he refers to other Christians as slaves of Christ. And then those people who are Christians, who are slaves of Christ, want to express their commitment to Christ by serving in the church. Servant is someone who works for someone else's benefit. And as servants of Jesus, as slaves of Jesus, our ultimate master, we become servants of one another in the church. It may not be working quite in your head, but if you roll it around a few times, it's quite a helpful model to think about, really. We're committed to Christ, and that shapes the way we serve. How do you serve? Well, you follow the commands of Christ, and you look at the example of Christ, and ultimately you refer everything to Christ. So it's not as though you're working for everybody. You're working for Christ. But as you work for Christ, you say, Christ calls me to work for the benefit of other people, to serve them, to make their lives better, to do things for them. So we need, at a start, servant-hearted leaders. We need servant-hearted leaders. Jesus is talking there in that Mark and Luke, to the disciples. Often in the Gospels and in the letters, there's an address to leaders, particularly to make sure that they're thinking of their role as service, not as lordship, not as lording it over people, not making people your slaves. So we need servant-hearted leaders. We need people who don't measure their greatness in terms of who they control, but who they serve. Who am I serving today? Who am I helping today? We need leaders who do jobs not for their profile, lots of people will see this, but for their usefulness. Lots of people will benefit from this. We need servant-hearted leaders who exercise any gifts they have, not to dazzle, not to intimidate, not to make people feel small, but to build up and to encourage and to serve the needs of the congregation. And friends, as leaders of the church, we really need your prayers to do this well, because we're always being influenced by a world that doesn't think in those terms. We're always being influenced to want to lord it over people, to think about the church as a company that we run and not as a body that we serve. And we need your prayers, and we need your encouragement, and sometimes we need your rebuke to say, you're not serving, you've started lording it. And of course, that's always a difficult balance. Leaders always, whether they're doing it well or badly, are often seen as lording it over people and often seen as not listening. But under God, we need to be getting better and better at this. You need leaders of this church who see their primary role as serving. But we want the whole church to be distinctive, to be different by its serving ethos, to have servant-hearted members. We want servant-hearted members of people here. Servant-hearted people whose basic predisposition, whose basic reflex is to say, how can I help? How can I serve? How can I make your life better? How can I show mercy to you? How can I care for you? How can I build you up? How can I encourage you? How can I do something for you that improves your Christian life, that improves your practical life? How can I serve you? How can I help? We need servant-hearted people in the church. How can I fetch something? How can I carry something? How can I do something? Are you asking those questions? How can I help you? How can I serve you? How can I serve the church? We want people in the church who are willing servants. Now, there are lots of encouragements in this church in terms of service. There are lots of people who do lots of things. Some of those kind of high-profile events we do, like the thing on Wednesday where there was 130 people here again, and lots of people working very hard. So it's not a complete train wreck in terms of service in this church. But just like your leaders, we're all work in progress, aren't we? In terms of becoming more and more like Christ and more servant-hearted. People in this church do often what's needed and what they're able to do. But sometimes we all tend towards doing what we like doing. Sometimes we have reasons for that, which are good. Sometimes we have reasons for that that are made up. Sometimes we say we're too busy to help on such and such a thing. Sometimes we say, this is not my calling. Which may be true of some particular things, but let's just take the crudest example of cleaning out the toilets. You know, have you ever said, cleaning out the toilets is not my calling? I bet some of you have in jokes sometimes. I think I have at home sometimes said that. It's not my calling. It's not my leading. God hasn't called me to clean the toilets. Well, maybe he has. Maybe he has on a given morning called you to that kind of a thing. So sometimes we make excuses. All of us do. I wonder if the phrase, I don't do, ever passes your lips. I don't do children's work. I don't do old people. I don't do house group. I don't do visiting people. I don't do too many meetings. I don't do praying. Have you ever said that? Have you ever thought that? I don't do something. Is that being servant-hearted? Does that ever make sense? Maybe there's an I can't do. Maybe that's true. But I don't do. Now, of course, we need to recognize our gifting and our limitations. Had a couple of ladies who turned 80 recently, and I was pondering on asking them to run a youth football team. But we have to be realistic. They're both very sprightly, and I'm sure they could kick a ball, couldn't you? I'm sure she'd, yes, okay. But maybe, you know, you have to be sensible about gifting and what people can do. But in terms of willingness, in terms of predisposition, we want a church full of people who are saying, can I help? What can I do? How can I serve others? How can I serve Christ? How can I serve the church? So every Christian, I encourage you this morning to think, how can I be a better servant? Not to be discouraged, because many of you are doing lots of good things, but to think, how can I, with God's help, be a better servant? Connected with that, we serve in the body, particularly in the body of the church. We read Ephesians 4 just a moment ago. There's some of that text on the screen there. Christ gives out gifts, and he prepares people who will have teaching gifts, who will declare the gospel and explain the gospel. And he gives those teaching gifts in order to do what? To prepare God's people to be really clever. To prepare God's people so they can impress others with their theological knowledge. To prepare God's people to fall asleep. No. To prepare God's people for works of service. And that service takes place in the church, which Paul likes to describe as a body. Does this in Ephesians. He did that back in Corinthians as well. And he shows that a mature church, a grown-up church, operates like a healthy body. In a healthy body, all the various parts work to complement each other, to help each other, and they all depend on each other. And our serving takes place in the church. In 1 Corinthians 12, Paul says there's different kinds of service. There's different ways to serve, but they're all about serving the body and making the body work. And that gifting is complementary, meaning what you do complements what someone else does. It finishes off what someone else does. Not all the gifts are the same. We're not all good at one thing. God has made it in the church, as he's made it in his world, that we have different gifts, and we need to bring those different gifts and say, how can I serve and make the body work? So they're complementary. We help in different areas to make the body work, and they're interdependent. In other words, we rely on one another. So the serving you do in the church is, it's not just about kind of fulfilling a requirement of membership. It's not just about being seen to do something. It's about making the body work. It's about not being a leg that drags along behind you. It's about not being an eye that doesn't work. It's about complementing and depending on one another. Just do a thought exercise for a moment. Imagine yourself kidnapped, taken out of church life completely. Not seeing any other person from this church for a period of time. How would you feel? Assume that everything else is okay. All the conditions are okay. You're being fed well. You've got Sky television beamed into wherever you are. You've got your family are with you perhaps as well. Let's pretend that they're not members of the church. But in terms of church, you're completely cut off. The rest of your life is absolutely fine. How would you feel? You should feel like you're the arm that's missing. You should feel like you've been severed from the body. You should feel like you're missing something. And the church should feel like it has a severed arm, like something is missing. Now, I wonder if that would happen. You're out of the church. Are you missing the church? Is the church missing you? So what's happened to the body? We all know how we learn to cope with disabilities, how we learn to cope with perhaps having some part of our body that doesn't function. I wonder if sometimes in the church we learn to live with parts of the body not functioning, and that part of the body no longer relies on us, and we no longer rely on it. Has it got like that in the church for you, perhaps? No one would notice if you weren't there, because you're not serving. We're so fiercely independent, aren't we? We don't expect much. We don't want to rely on anybody. I encourage you this morning to think, not just in general, how can I serve, but in particular, how can I serve in the body to make the body work? And to think in terms of other people, how can they serve in the church? How can I encourage them to serve in the church so they function? Sometimes Certain parts of the body need to make other parts of the body work. You know what it's like when you fall asleep at night? You all know that, I guess. And when you fall asleep at night, you've kind of laid on one of your arms or something, and it completely goes dead. You know, that's one of the worst feelings, I'm sure. Giving childbirth and all those other things are just as bad. But that, to me, in the middle of the night, is one of the worst. I said, I'm sure that it is just as bad, or even worse, perhaps, yes. Much worse. But it's that kind of sense of panic when you wake up and you think, genuinely, because you're off sleep, your arm is paralysed. Okay, it's paralysed, it's all gone, my brain's, you know, everything's gone. It's completely paralysed. And sometimes you have to get the arm that's working, that's free, and you get this arm that's shaking like this and flopping over the bed, and it's getting like this, and it weighs approximately the size of a small car, doesn't it? And you can't believe how heavy it is, and you have to lift it up and shake it around, slap a few people, and eventually it starts working. Sometimes we have to do that in the church with people, don't we? We, in God's goodness, happen to be the arm that's working, and we need to grab hold of the arm that's been idle for so long that it doesn't function anymore and say, come on, guy, come on, girl. Serve. Get moving. Get the oxygen going. Do something to serve in the church. Perhaps you could be that to somebody. We serve Christ. We're all here to serve Christ, and we serve in the context of the church. But the last thing is to think, well, how do we serve? And that's to remind ourselves that service is modeled on Christ. Service is modeled on Christ. We want to be like Jesus as we serve. You remember those words in Philippians 2. In your relationships with one another, it's a slightly different version, because just incidentally, online now, the NIV, the one you can easily grab online, has changed to the NIV that's very recently been updated. So there's not an easy text source for the old NIV. So I apologize, the last couple of weeks I've just noticed that the translations are slightly different. So sorry about that. But anyway, it's almost the same. In your relationships with one another, have the same mind as Christ Jesus, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. When Paul wants to motivate the Philippian Christians to be servant-hearted, when he says, I want you to avoid all kinds of selfish ambition, going for gold yourself, when I want you to consider the needs of others ahead of your own, he knows just where to look. He knows just who to point to. He knows the perfect role model. And he points them towards Jesus. On the days that we're feeling bad, that we're not very good servants, it's not that we just want to pull our socks up and say, yeah, I really do need to be a better servant. We need to look at Christ, and we need to look at the love of Christ, and we need to look at the example of Christ. Paul says, think like Jesus thought, and then you'll act like Jesus acted. Your attitude, your way of thinking should be the same as Jesus. Your mindset should be like Jesus. What was Jesus like? As we've sung and thought about already, he was a king, but he came to this earth and he didn't wear a crown. He humbled himself to become a man. He humbled himself even further to die the death of a criminal. He completely humbled himself. He gave up his rights in order to serve. He was a willing servant. And again, the word there that's translated servant is the word for slave. He became a slave in order to serve us. He became the lowliest in order to serve us. And Paul says, if you really look at Jesus, your heart will be so full of gratitude that you want to serve, and you'll see the example of Christ, and you'll say, I know how to serve. I love Jesus, so I want to serve, and I see how Jesus serves, and that's how I'm going to serve. I'm going to humble myself. I'm going to give up all my rights. I deserve this. I deserve that. I should be given this, but I'm going to give that all up, and I'm going to say, how do you want me to serve? Lord, how do you want me to serve? How does that work out in the church? Not how can I exercise my rights, but how can I give up my rights and just get on with serving as you did, Lord Jesus? That's our encouragement. That's our example. The perfect model for humble, sacrificial service. Look at Jesus. It's about loving him. It's about following him. It's about seeing our brothers and sisters as Jesus saw us. Jesus didn't serve people who were nice to serve. Jesus served people who were at times ignorant and very frustrating and misunderstood him, and many criticized him. He served sinful people. Service is not about doing nice things for nice people. Service is about humbly saying, you're part of the body of Christ. Christ loves you. I love you. How can I help you? And it won't do any good this morning if we feel a bit guilty that we weren't very good servants. And it won't do any good this morning if we feel a bit guilty that we're the limp arm. But it will help us this morning if we look at Christ and say, okay, I can see it. Jesus, you are such a great servant. And I want to follow your example because you love me so much. Please help me to do that. May that be our prayer. May that be our experience. Amen.